5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
What's up, gamers? This is episode 136 of One Man Watchpoint, an Overwatch podcast where we talk about everything going on in the wonderful world of Overwatch. If you're a returning listener, thank you so much for returning. And if you're new here, thank you so much for joining us along this wild ride. I'm, of course, your host, Sir Dr. JM. That's at Sir DRJM on all socials. So why not give me a follow? You know where to look. Go ahead, reach out to me there if you have questions, comments, topics for the show, whatever you want to see on here. Go drop it to me over on Twitter, where you can reach me at Sir DRJM. Now, you can, of course, find this podcast on all your favorite podcast services out there, Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, et cetera, et cetera. So go ahead and leave us a review, tell your friends and all that jazz. And of course, if you enjoy what you hear today on One Man Watchpoint, you can also check out the Ready, Set, Pwn podcast, where these days, somewhat infrequently, I join my hosts, my co-hosts, Chris and Alex, to talk about everything going on previously in the Overwatch League as it relates to the Toronto Defiant and the Vancouver Titans, and nowadays, mostly just the Toronto Defiant in the Overwatch Champions Series. Now, while we haven't posted an episode regularly in 2024 yet, over on Ready, Set, Pwn, we will be getting back into the swing of things here as we've now entered the group stage in OWCS, and of course the Toronto Defiant are doing very well. More on that to come in today's episode of One Man Watchpoint. But this week, because I was lazy and didn't record last week, you're actually going to get a double dose. So you're going to get an episode of One Man Watchpoint this week, and you're also going to get an episode of the Ready, Set, Pwn podcast as well. Hopefully, that's enough Overwatch to blast into your ears. But if not, we've got a required listening this week, not quite required reading, which is a recurring segment we do sometimes on the show, but a required listening. I will direct you over to all your favorite podcast feeds where you can check out the latest episode of the Grow Up, Level Up podcast. That's right, I've directed you here before because, of course, I was on one of their earlier episodes. However, check out Grow Up, Level Up on YouTube at youtube.com/GrowUpLevelUp, or check out the Grow Up, Level Up account on Twitter at Grow Up, Level Up, easy enough to understand, hosted by at SamsonXP. I happen to know who the next guest on Grow Up, Level Up is going to be, and if you're a fan of the Overwatch competitive scene, if you're a fan of the Overwatch League, if you're a fan of the Overwatch Champion Series, but most importantly, if you're a fan of one Canadian organization in particular, I'm sure you can guess which one, you'll want to check out the next episode of Grow Up, Level Up. It should be posting the same day as One Man Watchpoint, so by the time you're listening to this, you can check out the Grow Up, Level Up podcast for a special feature with, well, I'm not going to say who. You'll have to check it out to find out. But that is our required listening for the week. Go ahead and check out that. And while you're at it, check out the backlog of Grow Up, Level Up episodes as well. Check out my episode, but check out every other episode as well. There's a few other Overwatch related, I was going to say adjacent, but a few of them are quite literally Overwatch scene people from the Overwatch scene. So if you've followed the Overwatch competitive scene in the past years, then definitely go check out the backlog of episodes because you'll find more than a few that you'll want to check out. Enough of all that. You can check out One Man Watchpoint. You can check out Ready, Set, Pwn, and you can check out Grow Up, Level Up on podcast services everywhere. Now, we do have quite a bit to talk about today. This is part of why the episode is late. Last week, I was kind of sitting on my laurels thinking there isn't a ton for me to talk about. There was obviously some drama going on in OWCS that I think has been beaten to death by outlets greater than mine, so I don't think I'll go into that too much. However, since then, we've had a number of other stories develop that made me kind of go, okay, I need to get off my lazy ass and record something. So here we are. Let's dive on in.
I'll do this alone if I have to.
All right, so first things first, before I get too deep into the show, I'm going to give you a breakdown of what we're going to talk about today. We're going to cover a number of stories sort of about Overwatch 2, about the game in general. We'll start with some patching details and I don't know what to call it, a dev diary, I believe, to go over a little bit about what's happening in the game. We'll talk about some of the crossovers that have been announced and are coming very quickly here, and then we'll kind of transition. We'll talk a little bit of OWCS news. After that, of course, we will move into a recurring segment that is back after so long. We will look at the OWCS recap, and of course we'll take a quick peek at next week's games in the OWCS. So of course, if you're not interested in the competitive side of the professional competitive side of the Overwatch scene, then don't listen to the second half of this episode. And if you are only interested in that, then hey, just jump halfway through this episode and only listen to that. I don't care. Just listen is what I'm asking. Now, let's get into the news. So our first story is going to take us from .esports.com with an article by Nadine Mansky published on March 7th, which reads, Overwatch 2's damage passive is getting nerfed as devs push game in, quote, correct direction. Last month, Overwatch 2 had its largest patch since the game's release in 2022, bringing changes across the board to projectile sizes, health pools, and passive abilities. While some aspects of the Season 9 patch were controversial, director Aaron Keller said in Overwatch 2's latest director take this week that he believes, quote, the direction they're heading in is correct, but they agree some changes still need to be ironed out, end quote. The first issue that we'll be getting an adjustment in the scheduled mid-season patch, which releases on Tuesday, March 12th, by the time you're listening to this, that's today, or in the past, is the damage roll passive ability. The new damage roll passive, which was first introduced in Season 9, means any hero hit by abilities from a DPS hero has reduced health regeneration. This means their health will recharge slower, but they also take healing from support agents at a reduced rate. In the Season 9 patch notes, the healing reduction was listed at 20%, but Keller stated in the most recent director's take that this will be nerfed to 15% in another Overwatch 2 update. The damage passive is still punishing, but should be less overwhelming, he explained, especially for support heroes to help out their teammates. Quote, Overwatch is about eliminating the opponents and sending them back to spawn, so we think it's healthy for damage heroes to have a large impact here, Keller said in the March 7th blog. Quote, but it may be pushed a bit too far. Alongside the damage passive change, other scattered Overwatch 2 heroes across the entire roster are going to get slight tweaks. The most notable changes are referenced in the blog, and they include Ana, Lifeweaver, Doomfist, and Mauga. Ana will be getting a noticeable buff to her grenade, a key ability in the sniper support hero's kit. She'll get even more self-healing from splashing the grenade on herself now, making her a bit more sustainable with the new larger projectile sizes that can wipe her out relatively easily as a squishy stationary hero. Lifeweaver will also be buffed to offer higher healing, which will then increase his maximum healing, bracket with his flower fully bloomed, to 80 instead of 70, alongside a lower time to reach the maximum charge. Keller said that the reduced damage roll passive should also make Lifeweaver's playing experience better in general. Meteor Strike, Doomfist's ground-shattering ultimate ability, will now have a minimum damage impact of 50 instead of 15. This is a buff that seems fairly massive at first, but really just makes the ultimate more consistent as the damage, quote, scales from the edge of its effect to the center, according to Keller. This just makes Meteor Strike more predictable for allies and foes alike. Finally, Mauga continues to receive changes months after his release as a controversial tank who seems to shift between being in and out of the meta with every patch. Overall, he's getting buffs this time. Cardiac Overdrive has a shorter cooldown and will fill over health, and Overrun has increased damage when Mauga stomps down. More changes will come in the March 12th patch too. They're just not locked in yet. So, wanted to touch on that because obviously we had quite the shift, as the article mentions there, with the drop of Season 9 and the overhaul of sort of the some of the base mechanics to the game, I would say. I know when this all first kind of was teased or leaked even and then discussed, you know, a lot of people kind of ran around like chickens with their heads cut off. Everyone sort of panicked and thought, what are they doing? They're ruining the game. Of course, everyone's seen the clip of Valorant versus Overwatch with that the person outlining someone with their shots. Meanwhile, the hitboxes the projectile sizes in Overwatch were being increased, so you really didn't have to shoot directly at a hero to hit them and things like that. I think, generally speaking, the reception has been quite positive. Of course, they're never going to get anything perfect on the first try, so certainly some tweaks are necessary. I don't hate what I'm hearing here. I mean, I'm just going to scroll down to where they mentioned the actual heroes getting some changes there. I think Ana and Lifeweaver are the two that kind of stand out the most to me. Ana, of course, because everyone loves Ana. She's one of the probably most favored support heroes. I think people, generally speaking, really like her because she has a high skill ceiling. She's just a really fun character to to interact with, to have on your side, as well as to play, of course. For me, though, I had recently begun enjoying Lifeweaver, who's never really been super in the competitive meta, but I thought he had kind of gotten to a place where his kit was a lot more fun, and he felt like he was making more of an impact. And then, of course, with these Season 9 changes, they kind of stripped all that away, and he seemed basically useless. So I'm excited to see that he might be getting a bit of a buff there. Doomfist and Mauga, do I think they really needed that much of a change? Doomfist has always been strong for Doomfist one-tricks. Maybe this makes him a little more viable to a more mass audience. I don't know. And then Mauga is just bit of a question mark, because I think he was a much anticipated hero, but I think, you know, he's kind of mostly been a flop, to be honest with you. So anyways, that's where I'm at with that. Let's move on here and let's get into some of the fun stuff. So of course, last week, as I mentioned, in the midst of not much news to talk about, as we ramped up to our first Overwatch Champion Series group stage games, they decided to sort of drop more info on not just one crossover, but a second crossover happening in the Overwatch world. So we're going to head over here. We're going to stick with Dot Esports, this time with an article by Adam Snavely, published on March 8th, which reads, Overwatch 2 cross Porsche collab gives D.Va a slick new legendary skin to drive supports with. Have you ever felt like a runaway car when you suddenly spotted a lone support in front of you while playing as a tank in Overwatch 2? Well, the game's new collaboration with Porsche will only enhance that feeling. Officially announced today, Porsche is entering an Overwatch collab game with several new skins and cosmetics inspired by the automaker coming to the game. Hot on the heels of the previously announced, we'll get to this, Cowboy Bebop collaboration, the centerpiece of the new skins is undoubtedly D.Va, whose mech gets a makeover that wouldn't look too out of place in a Need for Speed game. The stylings of the new look mech were inspired by the new Porsche Macan, an all-electric vehicle from the renowned German automaker. And what's a mech without its mecha pilot? D.Va herself gets driving gloves, a bomber jacket, and a sleek quarter zip and sunglasses combo that makes her look far more like an off-duty Formula One racing driver looking to get into trouble than her normal pilot suit. If the message is supposed to be, quote, you'll look this cool while driving the Porsche, end quote, they're at least succeeding with this D.Va skin. There will also be accompanying cosmetics to go with the Porsche D.Va, including another legendary character skin to be unveiled at the launch of Season 10 in Overwatch 2. Article gets into a little bit of editorializing here, but then it does say, if you're lucky enough to be in Austin, Texas at the moment, you can get a larger-than-life view of the new D.Va skin as well. The Porsche installation at the South by Southwest Festival will feature a 7-foot-tall statue of Porsche D.Va to underline the collaboration between the two companies. While Blizzard hasn't announced how players can get Porsche D.Va and other skins yet, it's a safe bet to assume the new collab cosmetics will make their way to the store sooner rather than later, just like the Cowboy Bebop skins. Save up your coins and stay vigilant in your shop if you want to get your hands on these skins. Porsche tends to move quickly. I see what they did there. That's a good one. That's a good one. So anyways, this is honestly a bit of a question mark. Bit of a strange one. Don't think anybody saw this coming. To me, feels a little bit like the Gentle Monster collab, which just sort of okay came out of nowhere. You know, do I think that Porsche and Overwatch have a largely common audience? Not really. Can anyone that plays Overwatch afford a Porsche? I'd be curious. I'm sure there are people out there, but will anyone care that much? For me personally, I will admit I'm a shill. This could convince me to get this Porsche. But also, what I would rather have is that mech suit that they built, because it looks cool. So if you haven't seen this, go check out this article, or just, you know, Google Overwatch 2 Porsche crossover, just for the pictures of the real life mech suit that they built. It's pretty damn sweet. So anyways, I'm looking forward to that. I didn't actually realize that they had said there was another skin coming and that it's going to be unveiled with Season 10 until I read the article here. So good to see that. I'm always a fan of more and more and more, and I love my skins. So anyways, go check it out. Now we're going to have one final story here on .esports.com. This is also our final story in terms of news. And then, of course, we'll jump over to the Overwatch World. Nope, not Overwatch World. Overwatch Champions Series news from this week. This article is by Scott Dew, published on March 11th, which is today as of recording, and reads, Overwatch 2 Cross Cowboy Bebop gameplay trailer gives best look yet at awesome collab skins. I think it's time to blow this scene, get everybody in the stuff together, and get ready to experience an anime classic in Overwatch 2's Cowboy Bebop collaboration. The new collab goes live tomorrow, March 12th, but Overwatch 2 has unveiled the first in-game looks at the skins for Cassidy, Ashe, Sombra, Malga, and Wrecking Ball in a new gameplay trailer today, and they just look incredible. We've then, of course, got an image here of all the skins. Cassidy looks like a true space cowboy as Spike Spiegel. Ashe shines as Faye Valentine. Sombra is a fun fit for Ed. Malga brings his massive chain guns in a new spin on Jet Black. And the free legendary skin for Wrecking Ball has the hamster Hammond portraying the corgi named Ein. I believe it's Ein. Probably like Einstein. So anyways. Unfortunately for fans, with two tanks and three damage heroes in the mix, players will have to head into open queue game types to play as the Cowboy Bebop squad. But without a support hero to heal them up, it's not a recommended strategy. It could be a good amount of fun, though. Wrecking Ball's skin can be obtained, quote, by playing games and completing challenges, end quote, according to Blizzard, but the others will be available for purchase in the in-game shop. The collaboration will also include emotes, highlight intros, and more, all likely as part of store bundles that will be up for sale for Overwatch coins starting tomorrow, March 12th, and be available for a limited time only. Overwatch 2 has been a bit of a collaboration machine of late. The game made headlines with its Le Seraphim crossover late last year, along with a special Porsche skin for D.Va coming soon. Cowboy Bebop follows last year's anime-inspired collab with One Punch Man 2. I believe that's the end of the article here. Oh, the Overwatch 2 Cross Cowboy Bebop event begins tomorrow, March 12th. So, exciting stuff here. If you haven't seen the trailer for this, go check it out because it's awesome. And if you haven't seen the skins, go check them out because they're also awesome. Now, I have some thoughts on this. So the interesting thing to me about this collaboration is that I think on one hand, it shows sort of where they see their target audience, obviously, with this being the second anime collaboration. And obviously, you know, I would probably say to most of a Western audience, anime and K-pop kind of are in a similar circle of the Venn diagram. Porsche, definitely not, but hey, whatever. So I think this kind of shows their hand a bit and gives us an idea of what kind of collaborations they're targeting and what they might be looking at. Now, it also wouldn't surprise me at all if, you know, the next collaboration that they unveil comes totally out of left field and is totally unrelated, right? They kind of, you know, call these ones a red herring and then they completely change directions just to, you know, keep us on our toes. That said, if they were to do another anime collaboration, I would absolutely love to see a One Piece collaboration. If they're going to stick in the anime realm, give me a One Piece collaboration, give me a Luffy skin, give me a Zoro skin, you know, give me a Nami. Oh my God, I can't even imagine. I would flip my lid for a lot of these characters, these One Piece characters. And that's speaking as a recent One Piece convert, if you will. The interesting thing about this is the One Piece collaboration the One Punch Man collaboration had me interested, but I never did get around to watching One Punch Man. Part of that being just the size and length of the anime. Now, I know I'm saying that in a bit of a hypocritical sense, given I'm watching One Piece right now for the first time. But I know the legacy behind Cowboy Bebop. I know that for a lot of people, it was kind of an early introduction to Japanese animation. And for a lot of people, it holds a special place in their heart because it was so good. And it's what got them into the scene in the first place. I also know that it's not incredibly long. And that has really incentivized me to watch Cowboy Bebop finally. I think I haven't committed yet. I haven't started it, but I definitely feel like I want to watch it. Now, a part of that is that I also heard it kind of is one of the sort of main inspirations behind sort of the theme and style that went into Persona 5 and or, you know, a bit of Persona 4 Golden, things like that, with the sort of jazzy music and everything. So hearing that definitely also made me more interested in Cowboy Bebop. So I think I will give it a try. Obviously with the collab dropping tomorrow, I don't know if I will have finished it by the time the collab is expired or gone, and I might miss out on these skins. I'm not big on, although I love skins, I'm not big on spending money for skins. I don't believe I have ever bought a skin with my own money. But I'll definitely get the Hammond one just to have it. And then, hey, who knows, maybe if I get deep into Cowboy Bebop before the event is over, maybe I do splurge and get one or two of these skins. Just looking at things right now, I think the coolest thing about these skins is that although they retain the traditional sort of Overwatch, you know, you can tell which character is which in its skin, it feels like they did more with this collaboration to make these characters look a lot closer to their anime counterparts than they have in the past. So, for example, with the One Punch Man crossover, I believe it was like the Newman Rider skin for Soldier 76. People, you know, eventually kind of found out that it was basically a reskin, a recolor of another skin that Soldier already had. Even the Doomfist skin for One Punch Man, I believe it's like Setiyama or something like that. It was clearly Doomfist, but sort of wearing a One Punch Man outfit. With this, I look at these characters and I know the characters. Like I know who Cassidy is. I know who Sombra is. I know who Ash is. I know who Mauga is. But you could show me these images and I might not realize that they're Overwatch. If I didn't know Overwatch, I wouldn't know they're from Overwatch. Whereas the other ones, I think you looked at those skins and if you knew One Punch Man, you would say, oh, that's One Punch Man. But you would know that it's One Punch Man in the style of something else. These ones really come across more as this is Cowboy Bebop, which I think is a neat take on it. It's not the direct, we're just going to put these characters directly in the game. I think they did more work to make these look unique, but still fit the Overwatch sort of theme, but also represent the source material itself better than maybe the previous crossover did. Maybe that's just my take. You know, maybe a lot of people will look at these and say, these look nothing like the characters from the anime. Hey, maybe that's true. I just think these look more uniquely like the anime than the previous crossover. So anyways, I'm excited for this. I love seeing crossovers. Even if I don't care about them, I'm happy they exist. I love living in the world we live in. And this brings us closer to a One Piece crossover as well. So I'm happy about that. Now, that's going to be it for our news segment of the show. And I think we'll pivot and we'll talk a little bit of Overwatch Champions Series.
This is it. Push forward.
All right. So before we get into the results from this past weekend, we're going to head on over to GG Recon and we'll talk about two different articles from... I believe they're both from Yiska. Let me just double check. Yep, both from Yiska. One posted on March 7th. The second posted today on March 11th or yesterday by the time you're listening to this or previously, whatever, days before you're listening to this. Anyways, we'll talk a little bit about these two stories. One is OWCS related. The other is OWCS adjacent, we'll call it. And then we'll talk a little bit about this past weekend's matches and this upcoming weekend's matches. So first things first, our first article here reads, three teams disqualified from OWCS in first group stage. The European teams Raspberry Racers and, now hold on here while I try to pronounce this, Turkavnez, and then in brackets, Diempero, as well as the North American team Iliad Artemis, which had clinched qualification for Stage 1 of the Overwatch Championship Series, have been disqualified, with three replacement teams that had finished just outside the qualification range taking their slots. While no official specific reason was named other than a, quote, breach of eligibility, some members of the affected teams are suspecting disputes around the residency rule. On March 3rd, the Swiss stage of OWCS concluded with 16 teams being selected for their performance during the 9 matches. While the Toronto Defiant qualified with a clean score of 9-0, the cutoff reached as low as 7-2, after which secondary factors such as the Buchholz score were chosen to determine the top 16 ranks. With groups already determined based on seeding derived from the Swiss stage, competitors were already aware of the opposition they'd be facing starting March 8th. However, a late eligibility check has unraveled the bracket due to the seeding being disrupted by the open slots left by the disqualified teams, with every team moving up one slot into the gap each team had left. The official Overwatch Esports Twitter account shared the news, explaining that admins had disqualified the three teams, citing ineligibility issues. That's a mouthful. With the announcement of the OWCS, its rulebook was made public, outlining factors such as a Battle.net or Faceit account in good standing, a minimum age of 17, and sufficient travel documents for in-person competition, as well as the allowed countries to compete in each competition. A potential explanation for Diem Pro. With lasting international sanctions on Russia, including the IOC recommending against the participation of athletes with Russian and Belarusian passports at the Olympics, some organizers around the esports industry have barred Russian residents from participating in their competitions. Russia was also not mentioned as an eligible jurisdiction for the OWCS in any of its regions. It is speculated that, at least in the case of DM Pro, who fielded Russian player Juzu, this exemption led to the disqualification of the team. Members of the team took to Twitter to voice their side of the matter, claiming that their player had contacted the admins with documents proving his current residence to be in Kazakhstan, a country that was eligible. While he had initially been barred from competing, the team alleges that the player had then been allowed to play only to be disqualified after the group stage matches had concluded. In the official rules, a resident player is defined as a citizen, a lawful permanent resident, or a holder of special status such as a refugee or asylum station. Non-immigrant visas are not considered proof of residence, the rules state. At the time of writing, no official specific reason for the disqualification of any of the teams has been shared. GG Recon has reached out to Juzu as well as Blizzard Entertainment, but did not receive an answer at the time of reporting. So, it was a little bit of a, there was a lot of hullabaloo around this. If I'm not mistaken, I know one of the teams, potentially Raspberry Racers, although I don't want to speak out of turn, so I shouldn't say that. I heard rumors that one of the teams had been caught cheating in some way, so either aimbotting or something to that extent on one of the PCs. And then, of course, the other big one was this visa/immigration rule decision. They've actually got a couple tweets here embedded in the article from Juzu, where he tweeted, "My whole team got disqualified because of me. I don't know what to say. I moved from Russia to Kazakhstan about 6 months ago to continue streaming since Russia is under sanctions. I had all the documents in Kazakhstan to legally live there, and I showed everything I have in an email form. Turns out it's not enough, and I can't use Russian passport since I live in Kazakhstan." So, you know, there's a bit of question around all of this. There's a bit of ambiguity to the rules, I suppose, but more so the ruling. I would hope that Overwatch and Blizzard did what they needed to talk to these teams and tell them what the rulings were and why these rulings were made. I don't know if we'll ever learn those details, simply because of the fact that, you know, they may have had to sign NDAs and things like that. But I hope it's clear why they weren't allowed. Now, there has been a bit of a debate online about the damned if you do, damned if you don't nature of this. You know, when it comes to going back to DM Pro and this Juzu person, you know, a bit of a debate about, does the whole team need to be disqualified or should he just be dropped from the roster? And again, damned if you do, damned if you don't. If you drop him and say the rest of the team can still compete, well, it kind of throws into question, you know, would they have made it that far without him in the first place? If you disqualify the whole team, it comes across a little bit as penalizing people who may not have even known that, you know, this person was technically ineligible. So again, damned if you do, damned if you don't. For me personally, I think I fall more so on the side of, especially at this early stage, you have to take kind of a hard rule. You have to draw kind of a hard line in the sand and say, you know, this is it. We're disqualifying this team. We're disqualifying that team. We're disqualifying this other team. for whatever reasons. Do they need to say those reasons? Not necessarily. But again, I hope they communicate that to the orgs and players and teams that are being disqualified. So anyways, again, early in the OWCS, in the grand scheme of things. So I think ultimately they're making the right call. Of course, there are going to be parties who suffer. And of course, there are going to be parties who disagree with that statement. But I think, you know, it's kind of a case of they have to follow the rules strictly, especially this early on, not only in the season, but also in the life of Overwatch Champion Series, if they want to be taken seriously. And if they want people to understand that you can't bend the rules or have the rules bent for you. You won't be able to get away with it. And ultimately, by drawing a hard line in the sand, hopefully organizations, players, everyone takes it seriously and make sure they don't put themselves at risk in the future. So moving on from there, our next article by Sasha Yiska Heinisch reads, Overwatch 2 confirmed for Esports World Cup. The Esports World Cup Foundation has announced Overwatch 2 as one of its titles for the event, set to take place this summer in Riyadh, Saudi Arabia. According to a press release, the Overwatch Championship Series will, quote, serve as an opportunity for EWC qualification. They then have a tweet embedded, which I have all sorts of questions about, but it is from the Esports World Cup at ESWCGG, and it says, Spirit Dragon spotted in Toronto, hashtag Overwatch 2, handshake emoji, hashtag Esports World Cup, is getting closer and closer. What hero would fit the best to represent Riyadh? And they have this little video thing of what looks like a drone projection dragon thing swirling up the CN Tower. And it says Overwatch 2 Cross Esports World Cup, Riyadh Summer 2024. Let's continue with the article before I get into that. For months, the Overwatch 2 community has been speculating on the game's involvement in the Esports World Cup. With the announcement of the Overwatch Championship Series in January, the schedule with a glaring hole in summer during the allotted month for the EWC suggested participation in the event. The announcement also shared at least one of how teams will be able to participate in the World Cup, outlining the OWCS as a qualifier for the event, though no specifics have been shared on the selection of the teams. Few other details have been shared, with event dates, format, or prize pool currently unknown. The Esports World Cup is a multi-week event hosting a large number of different esports in Saudi Arabia's capital, Riyadh. Despite its name, the event will not pit national teams against each other, but will host esports organizations from around the globe to accrue points across various titles to be added to their overall score. So far, 10 other esports titles, including Rainbow Six Siege, PUBG, Counter-Strike 2, Dota 2, StarCraft 2, have been announced, with other titles potentially following. Riot Games and its esports titles have also been tabbed for availability, though a participation of either Valorant or League of Legends has not been confirmed for 2024. The Esports World Cup Foundation and its event, the EWC, has been formed as part of Saudi Arabia's Vision 2030, seeing the public investment fund increasingly invest and purchase companies in the esports industry. Savvy Gaming Group acquired the event organizers, Electronic Sports League and Faceit, in 2022, merging them into the ESL Faceit Group, bracket EFG, also incorporating Vindex in 2023. For Overwatch Esports, Vindex, with their company Esports Engine, has previously acted as a production partner for the Overwatch League in the Western region. For OWCS, EFG has taken over the production and event organizing duties in EMEA and North America. DreamHack, another EFG product, will serve as the host of both OWCS international events for the 2024 season. All right, so at face value, as an esports fan, as an Overwatch fan especially, of course, this is something to be excited about and something to be celebrated. The Esports World Cup is effectively a large esports tournament. I hesitate to say tournament because I don't want to imply that you have different esports competing against each other or anything like that. But as they described, it is currently really the only sort of international event that we have that hosts many different esports and brings them all together in sort of one central location. I can only imagine how sweaty and how awesome this event would be. Now, I say sweaty in the best way possible. again, face value, this is exciting. And this, I think, positions Overwatch as one of the premier, you know, I still wouldn't say it's a tier one esport, but I would say this kind of positions it as a tier two esport, if we think about esports in that way, right? The list of esports that Yiska mentions there, already confirmed: Rainbow Six Siege, PUBG, Counter-Strike, Dota, StarCraft. You know, these are well-known esports titles. Of course, they also mention League of Legends and Valorant. We know that obviously Riot Games is probably the tier one game producer when it comes to esports. So I think it would be easy to say League of Legends and Valorant are probably tier one esports. I think you could maybe put Counter-Strike up there as well. Maybe something like Rocket League. Anyways, point is, I think the participation of Overwatch in this event is exciting for Overwatch. It means good things for the future of Overwatch and for the viability of Overwatch Champion Series as an esport, especially given that, you know, it's tied to this. The other side of this, of course, comes back to Overwatch, the Overwatch Champion Series as a whole. Of course, Overwatch Champion Series exists in large part because of ESL Faceit and taking advantage of the Faceit platform to really sort of prop up the esport and make it so that, you know, they don't need to have this this larger league format like we saw previously with the Overwatch League. Of course, Faceit being involved is problematic because, of course, they're a Saudi-run organization and everything, which Yiska touches on in the article here. And that leads us into why this is even more problematic than Overwatch having ties to ESL Faceit and having them sort of run the league in the sense that they are currently, the league being over OWCS. Of course, this is directly in the country that is the reason for so much strife and for so many of the conflicts that people have with ESL Faceit being in the sort of backbone to OWCS. This is even more directly positioning that in front of people, and in a lot of ways tying Overwatch to the ideologies that are supported by Saudi Arabia and Saudi Arabian organizations. All of that said, I would direct you over to a different required watching that I will put in the show notes, of course, because I think they do a much better job talking about this issue and kind of dissecting it in a digestible format than I do right now as I ramble, or than I ever could. So I will direct you to a video posted on YouTube by, of course, Sideshow, former Overwatch League caster, which reads, "Saudi Arabia is poisoning esports. We should care." Now, this video is something that Sideshow put up, looks like about 2 months ago on YouTube. Oh, January 4th. There we go. Okay, so yeah, 2 months ago. And he really breaks down sort of the discussion about why the Saudi investment is, I mean, like he says, poisoning esports, right? It's become pervasive and they're making a major play to become the prominent force, the dominant force in esports. And it's unfortunate to see that because you would like to see investment from other groups. You'd like to see diversification. And you'd like to see, realistically, you'd like to see an organization with good morals, good values, supporting a product that you like. And ultimately, something like this is not the case. Just to go into some of the topics here, because again, Sideshow did a great job producing this. He's got everything timestamped if you want to jump through and see kind of the argument that he makes. But he starts with intro to a heavy topic. He goes into what makes Saudi investments different. What about USA? They're bad too. Saudi's investment into their future. Continuing on, jumping ahead a little bit. how sports washing works in Saudi Arabia, death penalties for social media posts, women's rights in Saudi. Can you even fight this level of money? Fighting apartheid in sports, are there lessons, and why it's important to say you care? So again, I'll include the link to this in the show notes, but go check this out because it's important. And again, it kind of highlights a lot about why this Esports World Cup announcement is a good thing for the Overwatch esports scene, but has a dark cloud over it, if you will, kind of thing. So anyways, that's a heavy topic. Like I say, go watch Sideshow's video because he's going to do a better job describing it than I ever could. So let's move on now. And we will finally move into a little bit about the OWCS. Of course, this past weekend, we had many matches, which saw us moving through the group stages, the first round of group stages for both EMEA and the North American regions. Now, the Korean regions, The Asia region, which includes Japan, Korea, and Pacific, have been already having their matches. I'm not actually going to focus too much on those because, again, you know, the hours are just not conducive to me following it that much. But I wanted to look at EMEA and North America and just quickly go over what happened this past weekend in case you missed it, in case you didn't know. And this is a topic for another time, perhaps next episode, perhaps on a shorter episode. But also, again, check out the Ready, Set, Pwn podcast because I think this is going to be something I talk about tomorrow on the Ready, Set, Pwn podcast. But due to the lack thereof of promotion of these matches, I have been finding myself finding it a little bit challenging to follow all of this. But here I am. I'm going to try and wrap it all up in a nice little bow for you so you can understand where we're at currently. So again, things start off or things now move into the group stage, which leads into a main event for this first stage of matches, which is exciting. And we have a number of teams here, which I'll kind of go into a little bit about the teams as we talk about the scores here. So after this past weekend's matches, of course, that would have been, checks the calendar, March, I believe it was 8th through 10th. We have, in the EMEA region, Group A is sitting with Twisted Minds with a 2-0 record, Team Peps with a 1-1, New Age with a 1-1 record, and A-Squared Tengu with a 0-2 record. Group B has Bubo Spraycheck sitting 2-0, Left Right Gnite 1-1, Quick Esports 1-1, and FlexoDX 0-2. Then, of course, Group C sees Rock Esports 2-0, Sheer Cold 1-1, Aw Yeah 0-1, and Bingus 0-1. Group D sees Space Station Gaming 2-0, Ex Oblivione 1-1, Aoma Esports 0-1, and Celtus 0-1. Now, what does all that mean? Well, that means that as we go into our second round of group matches, which is this upcoming weekend, these teams are all being seeded to face off again and see how they turn out to then seed them for the main event. So, of course, highlighting some of the main teams here, the big winners, all with 2-0 records, are, of course, Twisted Minds. Twisted Minds has some names you might recognize, like Yubi, KSA, Kellex, Skyrippa, all, you know, formerly of the Overwatch League, as well as some of them making appearances in the Overwatch World Cup last year. And a couple names I'm not too familiar with, LBBD7, Quartz, and then Slay, of course. Moving on from there, the other top teams, we've got Bubo Spraycheck which has Kai, Kevster, Sauna, Vestola, Masa, Crimzo, and of course the only name I don't know on that roster, Ghost 91. Bubo Spraycheck was a pretty fun team to watch this past weekend. Of course, when you've got Kevster running your DPS tracer, you know, it's always going to be a fun time. So that was a fun one to watch. Of course, I'm a big fan of their support line with Masa and Crimzo. You know, Crimzo representing Canada. And of course, Masa having that tie to the Vancouver Titans when he was there. The other two top teams, we've got Rock Esports and Space Station Gaming, with Rock being mostly unknown to me. They've got Roho, TVNT, AOY, and then, of course, they've got a couple former Overwatch Leaguers here with Checkmate and Izzyaki showing up. And then they do have, I believe, in fourth place. I'm just checking here just to make sure I'm not missing anything. Yep. In fourth place here, they've then got Space Station Gaming, which is Sparker, Backbone, Psycho, Hottie, Funny Astro, Landon. This is the team that was formerly announced as We Spitfire, of course, basically the London Spitfire squad coming back together, although missing, you know, one or two from last season. So no huge surprise there, I think, seeing those players doing as well as they're doing. Of course, some of the other teams do have, you know, some former Overwatch League players, some big names on them. Ex Oblivione, of course, has Shockwave, who we'll recognize. Let's see here. I'm just taking a quick look for anyone that you might know. Quick Esports has Dawn. Team Peps has Naga, Ben Best. I believe FD God as well. Yep, there he is. So lots of names that we know from the Overwatch League. A fair number of names that we don't know, which is exciting, right? That's kind of what we want to see. We want to see, you know, new people entering the scene. Now, moving on from there, we jump over to the North American region, which, of course, for me personally was more exciting, and I caught more of these matches. But in Group A, we have the Toronto Defiant coming out on top, 2-0, Shikigami Hikari coming out 1-1, Daybreak 1-1, and Final Gambit 0-2. That's, of course, your Group A. Group B saw Luminosity Gaming coming out on top. Sorry about the alarm there. 2-0, LFO 1-1, Citrus Nation 1-1, and Bang Bang Pow Galaxy 0-2. Group C saw Timeless come out on top 2-0, M80 1-1, Na ID Win or Na ID Win 0-1, Timeless Obsidian 0-1. And then Group D saw Students of the Game come out on top with a 2-0, Dreamland 1-1, Beluga's Platoon 0-1, and Pirates in Pajamas or Pip 0-1. So, of course, again, what we're seeing here in these group stages is there are clear top teams, I think. Once you get into the second and third positions, I think these matches are a lot more even. Most of these groups are turning out one top team, two mid teams, and then one bottom team, right? There's a few of them that, you know, are turning out more like Group C, where you've got one top dog, you've got one even, and then you've got two bottom teams. But for the most part, it's kind of this pattern of top, bottom, and two in the middle. Looking at the rosters of these, of course, the Toronto Defiant we know to be Merit, Sugarfree, Someone, Vega, and RuPaul, with Vega being really the only rookie, the only one who we haven't really seen in the Overwatch League, so, you know, is what it is, but obviously a dominant force. Group B, we then, of course, have Luminosity Gaming, which Luminosity Gaming, I believe, previously Maryville Esports, but Luminosity recently announced a partnership with them. They're going to be another, you know, familiar team with names like King, Dante, False, Juby, Luke Mino, and then a couple that I don't recognize, Vision and Squid. But they're coming out on top, so exciting to watch them. And then, of course, we have Timeless and Students of the Game. And Timeless, not to be confused with Timeless Obsidian, but Timeless, featuring mostly names that I don't know. Opener, of course, is one that you will recognize. CJ might be one that you recognize, but a lot of people are talking up a few of their players. Rocket on the DPS and Chopper on the DPS are two names that we're hearing quite a bit about, as I think they're impressing. And then, of course, we have Students of the Game as the final of those 2-0 teams. Seeing, again, mostly unknowns, but we've got a few names like Infected, Rack Attack, a few names we've seen before, Cal, popping up throughout the scene, either in contenders or, you know, maybe jumping over to the Overwatch League and things like that. So, All of that said, those top teams, those 2-0 teams that I just outlined the players for and everything, they have now qualified for the main event of this first stage. What will happen this upcoming weekend, which will be, as I check the calendar, March 15th, 16th, 17th, we will now see the week two groups matches for stage one, which will then seed, of course, the, I'm pulling up the bracket here, the opponents on the bracket. So those top 2-0 teams in both EMEA and North America have now qualified for the main event. And now, this upcoming weekend, we're going to see their opponents decided. So if we look at the upper bracket in North America, for example, we've got Toronto Defiant against a Group B number 2 opponent. We've got Timeless against a Group D number 2 opponent. We've got Luminosity Gaming against Group A number 2, and then Students of the Game against Group C number 2. So let's take a look at the schedule here for North America, since I just spoke about North America. On Saturday, we're going to kick things off at 2 p.m. PT, that's 3 p.m. Mountain Time, with Obsidian facing off against Na'id Win. At 3:30 PT, or 4:30 Mountain Time, we have Beluga's Platoon taking on Pirates in Pajamas. At 6 p.m. Mountain Time, we then have Shikigami taking on Daybreak, and that's going to be your three matches for Saturday. Before that, of course, we will also have three matches in the EMEA bracket. Now, let me pull up the EMEA main event real quick here. So EMEA, of course, we know Twisted Minds, Rock Esports, Bubo Spraycheck, and Space Station Gaming are all already qualified. And it will be Group B number 2, Group D number 2, and then Group A number 2, and Group C number 2. So on Saturday, this time at 9 a.m. PT or 10 a.m. Mountain Time, we'll have Bingus facing off against Aw Yeah. At 11:30 Mountain Time, we'll then have Celtus facing off against Aoma Esports. At 1 p.m., we'll have Team Peps taking on New Age. And that is your Saturday Groups Week 2 Stage 1 schedule. Moving on to Sunday, we'll jump back over to the North American region, where Citrus Nation will take on at 3 p.m. Mountain Time, we'll take on LFO. We then have M80 at 4:30 p.m. taking on Obsidian or Na'id Win. Of course, it is the whoever wins that match the day before. Then we have Students of the Game at 6 p.m. taking on Beluga's Platoon or Pirates in Pajamas, whoever wins that match. Over in the EMEA, of course, those matches occurring before the North American ones. At 10 a.m. PT, we have Left Right Goodnight taking on Quick Esports. At 11:30 Mountain Time, we have Sheer Cold taking on the winner of Bingus versus Aw Yeah. And then at 1 p.m. Mountain Time, we have Ex Oblivione taking on Celtus, the winner of Celtus / Aoma. And that will, of course, seed our main event, which then takes place the following weekend, March 21st to 24th. It will be a double elimination bracket. All matches excluding grand finals are first to three. Meanwhile, the grand finals are first to four. My big takeaway from this past weekend watching the group stage is, actually, I have a few big takeaways. Number one, unless you are the hardest hard of hardcore Overwatch fans, you do not need to watch anything before this. Yes, I understand that this format and allowing players to stream their point of view and everything is appealing to a small group of people. You are in the minority if you are watching every single one of those matches. There's a good chance that you might watch your team's matches. So for example, I'm friends with a number of the Toronto Defiant hardcore, and I know they watched all of the Swiss stage matches for Toronto. They saw all 9 wins that Toronto had. Those are first to two, so it is a little bit easier to watch. It is a lot more condensed, especially when your team is winning like Toronto was. I watched a couple of those matches, and they just breezed by. But for the most part, I'm going to say that for the majority of the audience, those matches just aren't that interesting. And again, maybe that's because I'm coming at it from a Toronto fan standpoint, where those matches were complete blowouts. You pretty much didn't need to watch them because you knew Toronto was going to come out on top 2-0. If they hadn't, it would have been absolutely shocking. But my point is, if you are a fan of the Overwatch League in a not quite hardcore way, you probably don't need to watch the Swiss stage. You can tune in at the group stage and you will be totally happy. The other takeaway is that the Overwatch Champion Series, because of the nature of that smaller grassroots tournament style, didn't feel the same. I really think that the Swiss stage, for me personally, watching those matches from a player point of view, without commentary, things like that, really wasn't that exciting and really felt like we had kind of a watered down product. Moving into the group stages, I was very excited to see Sui hosting, to see Mr. X, see Jaws, see Uber, all coming back to cast games and commentate on them. And that really felt a lot like a return to form. Now, the big thing is, production-wise, I understand they're doing the most with what they've got. It felt a little 2020, 2021 even, which I understand. Overwatch League was a premium esport without really being able to support itself, and that's why the Overwatch League collapsed. But it did feel like a bit of a return to form, but also it was obviously missing some of that flash that we're used to. And I say this as an Overwatch League fan, of course. I understand when we get to LAN and things like that, we'll get back to that. But regardless, it was exciting to see the change in how I felt from the Swiss stage to the group stage. And I will admit, I am excited to watch more this upcoming weekend. So I think those are kind of the big takeaways for me. Was number one, most people don't need to watch the Swiss stage. You just don't. You really don't. Number two, it feels like we're back. It feels like we lack a little bit of that shine, a little bit of that luster that we once had. But ultimately, it was like a warm hug to see Sui hosting both EMEA and North America, and then see Jaws and see Mr. X and see Necra and see Uber. And I know once we get to the main events and we also see the return of Jake and we see the return of Johnny, it's just going to feel like an even better warm hug. It's going to feel like a warm group hug, if you will. So anyways, those are my thoughts right now. Those are my overall takeaways of the Overwatch Champion Series as it stands. Like I say, I'm excited to see more.
I feel greatly empowered.
And with all of that said and done, it's time to wrap up the show. Thank you so much for listening to episode 136 of One Man Watchpoint and Overwatch Podcast. This is, of course, your host, Sir Dr. JM. That's at Sir DRJM. And you can find me on all socials out there. And you can follow me. And you can tweet at me. And you can DM me. And you can send me questions, comments, concerns, topics, whatever you've got for the show as they relate to video games in general, as they relate to Overwatch, as they relate to the Overwatch Champion Series or the Overwatch League. And I'm happy to bring them to the show. You can, of course, find this podcast and all your favorite podcast services out there, Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, etc., etc. Give us a follow, leave us a review, tell your friends and all that jazz. And of course, if you liked what you heard on today's episode of One Man Watchpoint, check out the Ready, Set, Pwn podcast for more talk on the Overwatch Champion Series and how myself and my co-host Chris and Alex are feeling on the temperature of the Overwatch Champion Series. Also check out the Grow Up, Level Up podcast. Their latest episode will be going up around the same time as this episode of One Man Watchpoint. And of course, as I mentioned, it will have some ties to the Toronto Defiant. So definitely check that out. And finally, check out the show notes for the link to Sideshow's YouTube video titled "Saudi Arabia is Poisoning Esports. We Should Care." That's going to be it for episode 136 of One Man Watchpoint. We'll catch you in another couple of weeks for more Overwatch League. Oh my gosh, I almost said Overwatch League action. Overwatch World Champion Series action.
Oh, you shouldn't have.